hangover left her feeling fearfully vulnerable. "All we can do is trust Jason," Humphrey said. Jason Asano was a lot of things. Mouthy to people he really shouldn't be was certainly one of them, as the Builder had long discovered. The Builder was now discovering that for all the things Jason was, one thing that he was not was easy to ignore. The strongest of the Builder's minions had, against all odds, fallen. It was finally forced to act personally, to see its intentions fulfilled, and had intended to leave the matter of Jason for later. While it might derive satisfaction from what it intended for the Rejector, its intentions for the world Asano struggled to protect took precedence. The Builder didn't give a lot of thought to the vessels he occupied. Knowledge of the mortal form was beneath it. It used and discarded the vessels as needed, without regard for them. If it had ever thoroughly explored their memories, it might have known that there was such a thing as Achilles' tendons. The Builder's vessel was not as physically resilient as Zato's metal body, by any means. If the Builder could have eschewed a fleshy vessel, then it would have. No artificial construct was sophisticated enough to contain its power, however. Only the magical matrix that operated the body of an essence user was sufficient, and even that required elaborate reinforcement. A vessel might be far more sturdy than an ordinary body, but it still adhered to basic physiological truths. One of them was that without certain muscles, it was a lot harder to stand up. It taxed the Builder's vessel very little to repair the kind of small injuries that Jason was capable of inflicting. Those brief moments of delay, however, were more valuable than gold for the team rushing up the tower. The Builder had strode away from Jason, ignoring him in the belief that Jason was unable to substantially damage its vessel, which was true. What Jason could do was educate the Builder on the critical areas where a small wound could cause specific debilitating problems. Even if immediately healed, each one stole away another precious moment. Jason did not undertake this task alone. Colin's afflictions, as Jason suspected, were no more effective than his own. What Colin could do was teach the Builder that eyes did not respond positively to rings of pointy teeth. Jason was only stealing seconds, but he and the Builder both knew that those critical seconds counted. Recognizing that ignoring Jason was hurting it, the Builder attacked. Crippling would be ideal, but killing was acceptable. Asano's immediate fate was unimportant compared to the Builder's other goals. So long as that fate was decided by the Builder itself, it would be satisfied with the outcome. Pinning Jason down was easier said than done. The Builder was still limited by the physical integrity of its vessel and could only levy silver rank attacks. Although he was no longer running, Jason remained elusive, using Shade's bodies to jump around, avoiding the attacks the Builder made by reshaping the ground beneath him. Shade was likewise on the move, avoiding the force-wreathed projectiles the Builder flung his way, providing Jason with an ever-shifting series of shadow jump portals. Now that he was forced into open combat, Jason knew that, for all his mobility, he would not be able to keep up the fight for long. Luckily, he didn't need to. The magic of the tower was an obvious presence to anyone with magical senses. The change rapidly ascending from the base stood out like a beacon of light. The Builder was faced with a conundrum. It could wield a single burst of gold rank power, but that would tax its vessel to breaking point. It was forced to decide between using that burst to put an instant end to Jason or save it for the rest of his team. Ultimately, stopping the team was the imperative. The tower's magic made it clear that they were entering its upper reaches, and the Builder needed to move swiftly. It shot into the air on a rising column of stone and earth that carried it towards the open windows running up the outside of the tower. The column was a compromise that consumed the vessel faster than the Builder wanted, but left it with vitality enough for that single burst of gold rank power. Again, Jason proved himself an annoyance not so easily cast aside. He called out Gordon, still ragged from the Builder's earlier attack. Gordon's two resonating force orbs shot out at Jason's direction, colliding as they met the column and exploding, cutting the column off. The column collapsed, and the Builder fell with it, creating a huge cloud of dirt and dust as huge chunks of stone fell to the ground. The Builder walked out of the cloud unharmed. Anger showed in its increasingly withered face, but was quickly schooled back into blankness. it looked up at the tower, where the shift in magic was nearing the upper reaches. The Rejector's companions needed to be stopped, forcing the Builder's hand. Its vessel started to wither in front of Jason, as it invoked a gold rank power while reaching a hand towards the tower, which it clenched into a fist. The tower was literally coming to life to impede the team. Stone flowed like water into crude humanoid shapes, animated creatures that attacked the team even before they finished forming. They were no stronger than Humphrey's dragon tooth warriors, but the team was already at the end of their tether, with most of the team unable to fight. Stash left Humphrey to kneel, as it took on a hydra form, barely able to fit on the ramp. They fought through the animated stone, but their progress was massively slowed. Slowing the team gave the Builder time to crush the scurrying bug that was Jason. Gordon had been called back for safety, a choice proven well made as the Builder abandoned any idea of maintaining its vessel, burning through its vitality with a storm of disruptive force-empowered projectiles. As Shade's bodies were cut down one by one, the Builder started making something. The materials were conjured up from the ground, like everything else, but this was smaller, taking form more slowly and carefully. Stone was transmuted into metal, and magic was imbued into the device. Finally, Jason ran out of moments to steal. As Shade's bodies were cut down, Jason's mobility was cut down with them. Despite its increasingly decrepit state, the Builder's vessel was still fast and powerful, dashing forward and grabbing Jason by the face. With its other hand, it slapped the suppression collar it had made around his neck. The vessel continued to rapidly wither as another column rose up, carrying the Builder and his new pet towards the tower. The team were achingly close to the end of the ramp, leading up to the flat roof of the tower. Party leader, Jason Asano, has had his magical abilities suppressed. Ability, party interface, has been negated. Your party has been disbanded. There were large open windows placed regularly up the tower's length, and the Builder stepped through one of them, blocking their path. It dragged Jason with it, holding his collar like he was an unruly dog.
You have done far better than I anticipated,
the Builder told them. It was a withered husk now, its voice inhuman and raspy. Even so, the team knew they would not be getting past it. The Builder's eyes rested on the cube, floating in front of Clive.
While I am not one to offer enemies second chances, the Builder said, the brute force enslavement of your souls would be a waste of good material. I offer you another chance to come willingly, which you should accept. Your souls will be mine, either way.
Jason crawled pitifully in the direction of his friends, who looked on with miserable expressions. The Builder let him slink away. If Asano enjoyed a last moment of camaraderie before those companions were turned against him, he would just suffer all the more. What the Builder didn't realize was that Jason was not looking for companionship. He was looking for a run-up. Very few things truly surprised an entity as old as the Builder. Jason's aura pushing back the suppressive force of the collar was one of them. The collar's power was strong enough that Jason was only able to successfully push against the suppression for a few scant seconds, but Jason's entire battle had been a war of stolen moments. It was time enough to retrieve a gold spirit coin from his inventory, which he slipped into his mouth. Immediately he leapt up, exploding forward with gold rank strength and speed. The Builder was able to react, even against gold rank reflexes, causing a wall of spikes to rise up between them. Jason ploughed right into it with his gold rank power, impaling himself a dozen times but still breaking through with momentum to spare. Just as he had smashed into the spiked wall, he smashed into the Builder, sending them both tumbling out through the window.
Go!
Humphrey shouted, jolting the team into a final race against time. Still leaning on Clive for support, Humphrey had been ready to react, realizing Jason was up to something the moment he saw him acting submissively. The team raced up the final stretch to the top of the ramp, feeling the last of the tower's magic turn as they stumbled onto the roof.
That's it, Clive said.
The world engineers are done, as is the magic to let them penetrate our world. The job's done, even if we die here, Humphrey said. How about we don't? Clive said, dropping down off Onslow and looking darkly towards the edge of the tower. Not any more of us, anyway. Before leaving the tower at the edge of the city, they had removed the portal arch from the top and stowed it in Clive's inventory. He pulled it back out and started drawing a ritual circle around it. If he was right, all the portals had opened, leading back to their own world. All he had to do was reconnect this one to the magical systems already in place, and their path home would open. As Clive worked, the rest of the team looked towards the edge of the tower.
Maybe he survived? Belinda suggested weakly. He's always doing impossible things.
He did do something impossible, Neil said, his voice hollow. He gave us a chance to defeat the Builder.
Humphrey's face was filled with anguish, and he took a step towards the edge of the tower until Neil put a hand on his arm.
He wouldn't want us getting ourselves killed to bring back a corpse, Neil said. We open the gate and we go.
Sprawled atop Onslow, Belinda gave the unconscious Sophie a worried glance, but said nothing. Jason tried to yell something pithy about pants as he and the Builder tumbled through the air, but there was a stone spike through the bottom of his neck. Everything was a blur as he spun around. Then it all went black.
You have died. All equipment has been returned to your inventory. World Phoenix token has been consumed.
Epilogue Chapter 1. Clive takes charge. Clive led the way through the portal, followed by Neil and then the familiars. Belinda and Sophie were atop Onslow, Sophie still unconscious, and Belinda not much better off. Humphrey had insisted on bringing up the rear, despite remaining on his feet only with the assistance of Stash, who had replicated Humphrey's own form to provide a supporting shoulder. They emerged in the ruins of the ancient village under the lake, the water held off by the magical dome maintained by Emir's people. There were numerous tables set up with magical paraphernalia, from the months of study the portal had undergone both before and after the team had gone through it. There were no people present until a sleepy-looking man emerged from one of the semi-intact buildings.
Hester, he said, rubbing a face and bleary eyes. I hope you remembered to bring the...
He stopped dead still, realizing the sounds that had roused him from his nap were not that of a supply run. He was suddenly very awake, eyes pivoting from the team to the open portal arch they had just come through. As he stood there looking stupid, Clive was already moving. Throwing a glance over the magical tools arrayed on the benches, he snatched up three small crystals in one hand while using the other to draw a magic circle in the air. It was vertical, placed between himself and the portal. As soon as it was complete, he threw the crystals through it one after the other. The first lit up with a blue-grey light before passing into the portal, the second an amber light, and the third a cool silver light.
What is it? Humphrey asked, limping over. I suspected that opening the portal this way would eliminate the rank gating, which I have just proven, Clive said. We need to get the strongest adventurers we can get in short order and go back for Jason.
We can't be sure where Emir and the Remors are, Humphrey said. My family estate always has silver rankers on site. Clive didn't pause to discuss, pointing a finger at the ground. He moved it around in a large circle, and runes appeared to form a ring in response. When the rune circle was complete, a portal shimmered to life in the middle of it. Clive stepped through, Humphrey managing to follow under his own steam. The Builder landed on its feet, dropping to a crouch, as Asano's body crunched into the ground nearby. It felt the magic of the tower complete its transition. The cascade of power that had been flowing into the world engineers now irreversibly inverted. The giant golems were nothing more than power sources for the portals now. The Builder did not fume with rage. It was older than the species of creatures it could sense scrambling around at the top of the tower, begrudging them neither their resistance nor their success. They were fighting for their lives and their world, and the Builder had weathered setbacks before. This was but a battle in a world-spanning war.
It turned to Asano, who did raise the Builder's ire. It could weather the failure of its minions, but the Builder and Asano had clashed directly, will to will. Its inability to force Asano into capitulation before the Starseed gave out had been the Builder's personal failure, and Asano still needed to be put in his place. Asano was dead, but that did not have to be the end. The astral space had no god of death to guide the soul into the astral. It would have to slowly drift into the Reaper's grasp on its own. That gave the Builder a window to act. As it considered this, Asano's combat robe vanished. A glow lit up from within his body, which started radiating heat. The Builder felt the surge of a familiar power and was filled with a fury that no mortal, even one as frustrating as Asano, could engender.
World Phoenix!
The Builder abandoned its vessel, which fell to the ground, an abandoned puppet. Along with the permanent guard contingent, the guards of the Geller estate included elites from the family itself. Basic duties were a core part of the Geller training ethos, teaching both diligence and humility. Humphrey had spent time guarding the estate, as had his mother before him, and he would be assigned to do so again in the future. When Clive's portal appeared in the atrium of the Geller estate's main house, the two Geller family guards went on alert. Clive heard this as he stepped through the portal, glanced around and found the pair of bronze rankers pointing weapons at him inadequate to his needs. Humphrey followed him out of the portal and waved down the guards.
Young Master Humphrey!
Clive casually fired a blast from his staff into the high ceiling. It left spiderweb cracks in the magically reinforced glass of the atrium skylight, but it was the secondary effect he had wanted to trigger. Sounds of alarm rang out around the estate. Humphrey's sister, Henrietta, had been on guard duty outside and rushed in with the first wave of respondents, spotting Humphrey.
Hump!
She didn't get the chance to talk as more people poured in, both guards and Geller family members, ready to fight. Humphrey and Henrietta were trying to calm things down when Danielle arrived in a blur, her conjured dimensional blade ready at hand. Her eyes went wide on seeing her son. In the midst of the commotion, Clive's voice cut over the noise, its fierce and commanding timbre startling those who knew him.
Lady Geller, he barked. Gather the strongest force you can immediately muster and teleport them to the portal arch under the lake.
Not waiting for a response, Clive stepped back through the portal, completely disregarding the chaos left in his wake. Humphrey looked between his mother and the portal.
What he said, Humphrey added. Seconds matter.
He followed Clive back through the portal. As the passage of four bronze rankers was the limit of Clive's portal, it closed behind him. The ghoul had no memory. It barely had a sense of self at all. Its body was still strong, but it felt weak. It knew it should be much stronger. It knew that it was dying. More than anything else, it knew hunger. Hunger was the ghoul's identity. Hunger was its purpose. It opened its eyes and pushed itself to its feet. There was a body on the ground, rich with power, but burning with a heat that every instinct told it to run from. Run it did, feeling the magic around it, looking for sustenance. There was much activity, but the ghoul paid it no mind. It cared only for magic that it could feed on, which was not present within the teeming throng fighting around it. Empty vessels made of stone and false souls in bodies filled with worthless magic were of no use to it. The only true souls were tainted and poisoned. Spreading its senses further, it detected pristine souls far above it. It turned its gaze upward, only for those souls to vanish, one by one. The ghoul let out a roar of frustration.
Lord Builder?
The ghoul turned to face the person talking at it. It was one of the worthless, tainted souls. No, said the tainted soul.
Thadwick?
Some murky thought fought its way clear of the hunger consuming the ghoul's mind. This tainted soul's name was Timos. It didn't matter, since it could not sate the ghoul's hunger. The tainted soul scrambled away, and the ghoul let it go. It was neither obstacle nor sustenance, leaving the ghoul's mind the moment it was out of sight. The ghoul picked up on something else. Something distant, but rich and incredibly potent. Even far away, it could smell it. It set out at a loping run. None of the things around it challenged it, rather scrambling to get out of its path. Clive paced back and forth in front of the portal as he waited, the passage of every second an interminable wait. Danielle had mustered a small army of bronze rankers, who appeared around the portal arch. She had also dragged along another silver ranker, her husband, Keith. She took in the open portal, the bedraggled state of the team, and immediately spotted the absence.
"Where's Jason?"
"He held back the builder so we could get clear," Clive said, already striding towards the arch. "The rank gate on the portal is gone. Follow me." Neil moved into step with Clive, and they went back through the arch. Humphrey was the only other team member with the mobility to go, but he held back, face filled with anguish. He knew he would be more liability than asset until the after effects of the potions he had taken passed, and he could replenish his mana and stamina. Danielle threw him a glance, seeing his nod before leading her people through after Clive. Henrietta approached Humphrey as the others passed through the portal.
"What happened to Clive?" she asked.
"The same thing that happened to all of us," Humphrey said darkly. The Geller force emerged on the tower top from the rigged portal Clive had set up for the team's escape. The tower was some 30 stories high, further up than any of them had expected, and higher than most of them had ever been. Clive had already reached the edge of the tower, drawing out a magic circle with one hand as he perused a book held in the other. While his spirit attribute reaching bronze had a positive effect on his already prodigious memory, there were far more rituals than he could ever memorize. This included the slow fall ritual he drew out, which took the form of a floating ring as it was completed, hovering off the edge of the tower.
"Everyone who doesn't have a flight or slow fall power, use this," he announced to the group, then leapt off the tower and threw the ring.
Neil didn't hesitate to follow. Danielle rushed to the edge of the tower, looking down. At the base of the tower was a wild battle of constructs and macabrely altered people, akin to those she had fought in the desert astral space. It was all contained within a wall that ringed the tower. Her people followed, with her husband joining her at the edge of the tower.
"There are silver rank monsters down there," her husband said, prompting her for direction.
"What did we send our boy into?"
"Let's go find out," she announced loudly, then jumped through Clive's magic ring.
An unattended soul was a greater bounty than the ghoul could ever have expected, let alone one so powerful. It floated around a sword in a block of crystal that the ghoul ignored, interested only in the transcendent light of the soul. It plunged itself into that light, which soaked into it like rain on desert earth, sating an insatiable hunger and bringing forth a grand transfiguration. The ghoul's ruined body was not just replenished, but transformed, bursting with strength and saturated with magic. Even so, the miraculous effect on its body paled in comparison to the changes affected on its soul. The Builder's power had hollowed out Thadwick's soul like a termite colony in a rotten log. What remained was an empty shell, broken and hopeless. Feasting on that powerful soul instigated a powerful change, making whole what first the Starseed and the Builder itself had ruptured. It was not a restoration of the soul. The result was not Thadwick, not as he had been. It was a new beast, something powerful and voracious. The wreckage of Thadwick's body, mind and soul was the foundation from which it built itself. The body and soul were reconstituted, the brain still holding Thadwick's memories. It also held a few scattered fragments left behind by the Builder's alien and unfathomable mind. As the last of the soul was consumed, the object it had been encapsulating remained. On a plain stone plinth was a sinister black and red sword, encased in crystal. As the last skerrick of soul vanished, tiny cracks started appearing in the crystal, glowing red and leaking wisps of black smoke. The intervention of the Geller force eventually brought the wild chaos to order. Danielle dispatched people to open the gates and give an outlet for the frenzied monsters to stampede out of.
The blank-faced converted that had once been purity priests were now macabre monstrosities and were cut down, while the cult's constructs were shattered to pieces. There were no surviving cultists, all either dead or fled by the time the Gellers arrived. Danielle went over where Clive and Neil were standing, numb, some distance from Jason's body. There was no question of its state, with death offering no dignity. The fall had been unkind, as had the stone spikes impaling his body. They could not get close, even to cover the body, because of an intense heat radiating from it. It was lit up with an internal glow, as if a fire were burning inside it. Bizarrely, it even affected Henrietta, whose fire essence gave her a power that should have shielded her from heat strong enough to melt stone.
"Any sign of the Builder?" Clive asked, not looking away from Jason. He was a little too close, the heat leaving his face glistening with sweat. But he didn't move.
"No," Danielle said.
"You said he's in Thadwick's body?"
"Yes," Neil said. "We only saw him briefly, though, and he was barely recognizable. I think the Builder's power left him more dead than alive."
"If he's here, we'll find him," Danielle said. "How stable is that portal, Clive?"
"Intractable," Clive said. "It would be harder to close than it was to open." "Don't let your people just run off exploring, though," Neil said. "This place has dangerous secrets, and the monsters have grown stronger."
"What is that fire?"
Clive wondered aloud, eyes still locked on Jason's corpse.
"Did the Builder do something to Jason's soul?"
"We'll figure it out," Neil said, moving closer to put a hand on Clive's shoulder. "We won't let this stand. We'll find a way to..." Neil trailed off as wispy rainbow smoke started rising from Jason's body, which dissolved away completely in short order. All that remained was a horrid stench and the lingering heat. With the dissolution of Jason's body, there was nothing else binding the team to the astral space, and they were portaled back to Greenstone. In the wake of the astral space being opened, the site of the portal arch below the lake became a hub of activity, even more than when Emir, Clive, and his people were trying to open it. The astral space was a realm of dangers and opportunities to be explored. A few days after the astral space had been opened up to the Adventure Society, more people arrived at the bottom of the lake to find everyone around the portal dead. Especially disconcerting was that there were two silver rankers among the fallen. In response, the three gold rankers present in the city were dispatched to investigate. Emir arrived, along with Rufus Remor's parents, Gabriel and Arabelle. The pair had remained in Greenstone to help Rufus launch the Remor Academy training annex. The last member of their old team, Cal, had departed Greenstone months earlier.
"Have you ever seen bodies like this?"
Emir asked Arabelle. She was a healer, and more familiar with various forms of death than the other two. The corpses looked normal to ordinary vision, but to magical senses they seemed desiccated and drained. So bereft of magic, they were like holes in the ambient magic around them.
"Energy vampire," Arabelle said. "A strong one."
"I'll talk to Hester about portaling Cal back here," Emir said. "We're going to need him if we're going to hunt this thing."
Epilogue Chapter 2 Lessons. Asano was dead, but that did not have to be the end. The astral space had no god of death to guide the soul into the astral. It would have to slowly drift into the Reaper's grasp on its own. That gave the Builder a window to act. As it considered this, Asano's combat robe vanished. A glow lit up from within his body, which started radiating heat. The Builder felt the surge of a familiar power and was filled with a fury that no mortal, even one as frustrating as Asano, could engender.
"World Phoenix!"
The Builder abandoned its vessel, which fell to the ground, an abandoned puppet. On another world, a diamond ranker stood in the throne room of an imperial palace. His name was Shaco, and he had pale, freckled skin, wild red hair, and eyes so brightly green they almost seemed to glow. Those eyes glared down at his descendants, the imperial family sprawled on the floor in supplication. There was no sign of the arrogance that had forged a planet-spanning empire. The elaborate throne of gold and ivory was empty. The emperor was on his hands and knees with the rest of the family, at the feet of their ancestor. Outside, the fires of rebellion were burning the imperial city to the ground.
"Ancestor,"
the emperor begged, not daring to raise his eyes from the floor.
"Please reawaken the guardian golems, we beg you."
Shaco had not needed to draw breath for centuries, yet he did so in order to sigh at the people arrayed before him. "When I bestowed the golems on your ancestors, you were warned," Shaco said. "Their purpose was to protect the dynasty, not to be tools of conquest. If used as such, then their power would be spent in the hour of greatest need. They were a gift from the Builder, for assisting him in claiming the astral spaces of this world. But this gift was a shield, not a sword."
"We were foolish," the Emperor beseeched. "Please, reawaken the golems, and we will use them in the future only as you have sanctioned. We have learned our lesson."
"If I did so," Shaco said, "then the lesson you learnt will be that you can ignore the correct path, because I will step forward to correct your mistakes. Your lesson is to be found with the armies outside. It will come at the hands of a world full of essence users you oppressed with the power you were given."
"Ancestor, I do not think any of us will survive this lesson. Our diamond rankers have abandoned us or even turned against us. Our enemies have put up a barrier that we cannot portal out of, and only the relics you left behind have allowed us to hold out this long. If you cannot save our empire, then at least save our lives. Only your might can take us away from this place to safety."
"When I was a boy," Shaco said, "our family were not kings, but farmers. We understood that the seed you plant is the crop you harvest. You have sown the seeds of discord, fury, and retribution. Now the harvest has come, the yield is heavy, and there is no one to blame but yourselves."
"Ancestor," the Emperor said, finally looking up, "will you truly let your bloodline die?"
Shaco laughed coldly. "Is that what you were relying on? That I would not let my bloodline expire? You are not my only descendants in this world. You are merely the ones that sought to leverage our connection to aggrandize yourselves instead of accomplishing anything on your own. My blood flows all across this world, in families that have heeded my lessons and treasured my gifts, instead of squandering them in pursuit of decadence and unearned glory. Many of them are even outside, leading the charge. They do not know that their revered ancestor is the same one their oppressors have used to justify their tyranny." Shaco spat on the floor in front of the Emperor. "You have disgraced me. Used me as a banner under which you performed atrocity after atrocity. You beg me to act, but I assure you, you would have nothing but regret if I did. It would not be to save you, but to scourge you, in ways even the armies baying for your blood would balk at." Shaco's gaze turned to the Empress. Through her aura he sensed her steeling herself, and she rose to her feet, raising her eyes with determination.
"Ancestor," she pleaded, "at least take the children. They are not to blame for the sins we have committed, and are still young enough to learn better. Let the rest of us die, if you must, but do not make them pay the price for the transgressions of their forebears."
"Wife,"
the Emperor snarled, looking up at the Empress.
"No," she shot back. "There is no saving us, husband. Do not be blind now, at least. Now we have reached the end."
The Emperor opened his mouth to speak, but did not, as Shaco's aura fell on him like a boulder. Shaco stepped up to the Empress, who matched his gaze, even as her aura wavered fearfully.
"That figures," Shaco said. "The only person to show moral responsibility is the one that married into the family. It seems the ability to grow a spine has been weeded out of this branch of the bloodline. Very well, Empress. I will take the children and you. It is time this family learned the lesson of being farmers once more, so farmers you shall be. Of course, there is nowhere in this world that your name is not hated. You will have to hide it, lest anyone learn whose blood the children carry, for it will surely be spilled. You will have enough to get by and no more. There will be those who can teach you the ways of the land. I will visit in a few generations and see how you have done. Shaco waved his hand, and the Empress vanished, along with the children gathered in the back.
Ancestor, the Emperor managed to choke out.
Shaco ignored him, tilting his head as if listening to something. I have duties, Shaco said. You have woven your own fates, and I shall intervene no more. Thank you for reminding me of the other relics I left behind, Emperor. I shall take them with me. Shaco vanished, the hope of his descendants vanishing with him. Physical realities existing within the astral came in vastly differing sizes. At one end of the scale were sprawling universes that spanned hundreds of billions of galaxies, existing for so long that they were, by most practical measures, eternal. At the other end were small astral proto-spaces, flickering into being only to disappear, again, just hours later. Size was largely a good determinant of how long a physical reality would last. There was, however, a physical reality that was barely the size of a small sun, yet had been in existence longer than most universes. This reality was a single, flat plane. It had no sun and no stars, containing only one thing, the city world of Interstice. Interstice was, as far as anyone with the power to check was aware, both the oldest and largest metropolis in existence. Oceans had interlinked, artificial islands with magical batteries charged by the great waves. Mountains were hollowed out, volcanoes turned into foundry cities. Intelligent species of every stripe could be found in jungles dotted with grand ziggurats, connected by magical skyways passing over the trees. Underwater cities connected by glass tunnels, with magical subways running not just on the floor, but on the walls and ceilings of the tunnels as well. There was no sun, yet there were days. No moon, yet there were tides. Climate affected not just weather, but gravity. It was a realm of impossibilities that some called the capital city of the cosmos. There were administrators in Interstice, but no rulers. When the great astral beings had business in a physical reality, this was the physical reality they used. In the face of that, who would be so bold as to claim to be anything but a caretaker? It was a place where the most powerful mortals in existence vied for the chance to be servants. One of the many city regions of Interstice was the island Glim. An artificial island, it defied the equatorial heat of its location to be made almost entirely of ice. The ground and buildings were all crafted from ice stained in rainbow colors, extending high above and deep below the surface of the water. The magical ice did not chill the bones and did not melt. The only cold it radiated was just enough to cool the tropical heat to a pleasant warmth. Shaco arrived via dimensional teleportation in the submarine bowels of the city, deep below the surface. He appeared in one of several portal squares that existed for the purpose. The local authorities noted arrivals and made various checks before allowing them into the city proper. Portaling into just any region of Interstice was frowned upon and magically obstructed. Shaco was powerful enough to circumvent such measures, but had no reason to do so. He flew into the air towards a shaft in the ceiling, stopping at the checkpoint building affixed to the ceiling. As he was a resident, a diamond ranker, and a favored servant of the Builder, the civil authorities did little more than note Shaco's arrival as he passed through the checkpoint. They delayed him no more than required to give a respectful welcome before he flew into the shaft and towards the surface. Emerging into open sky, Shaco flew up and over the city. Glim's buildings of colourful, shimmering ice were a kaleidoscope under the clear blue sky. At the very heart of Glim, as was the case with many city regions, were the districts claimed by the great astral beings.
The great astral beings could no more visit in Terstus than they could any other physical reality. Their servants and agents were the ones to occupy the space. Each astral being that wanted one had their own territory, with the districts forming a ring around a shared communal district in the middle. The Builder's District had the most varied and outlandish building designs, as the Builder was not to be outdone on architecture. Shaco had the finest residence in the Builder's District, making it one of the most impressive, if least subtle, homes in the entirety of Interstice. Shaco did not head for home, instead heading for the border, where the communal district met the Reaper's District. The Reaper's territory was marked by buildings whose ice was shaped and shaded like dark glass to look like towers of delicately carved obsidian. He alighted on the ground at the border of the Reaper's territory and went into a large, dark building. In the atrium, blue light shone through windows of ice, lighting up the dark, glassy walls. People moved out of his way as he crossed to the man sitting behind a desk.
"Master Shaco, sir,"
the man greeted.
"The Builder wishes to speak," Shaco told him. "The Reaper has anticipated this, Master Shaco. Master Velius is waiting in the dome chamber."
Shaco raised an eyebrow, but did not inquire further. "Thank you," he said, and rose up into the air. There were elevating platforms, but Shaco flew directly up and into a shaft in the high ceiling. There were magical barriers between each floor of the building, but they vanished to admit Shaco as he ascended all the way to the top. The shaft opened into a room that took up the entire top floor of the building, covered by a dome of glassy ice. It was a pleasant lounge area with rich but understated decor. More used to the Builder's indulgent opulence than the Reaper's preference for minimalism, Shaco found it rather plain. A man rose from a chair to greet him, offering him a friendly smile and a hand to shake.
"Velius," Shaco greeted warmly. "It's been too long."
"It has," Velius agreed. He was a tall Celestine with dark skin and a bushy mound of curly silver hair that matched his eyes.
"You've been back to your home, right? Is your family still ruling that world you're from?"
"For the moment," Shaco said. "And I do mean moment.
There's a horde at the gate situation."
"Ah,
they took something you gave them and got carried away?"
Velius asked.
"Exactly."
Velius nodded sympathetically as he waved Shaco into a comfortable lounge chair before sitting back down himself.
"I had similar problems," he said. "It's almost a rite of passage for diamond rankers. Did you decide to help them out or leave them to their fate?" "They needed a lesson they were not going to get from me."
"Very wise," Velius said.
"I made the mistake of getting my descendants out of trouble again and again. That just made them worse every time, until I just had to wash my hands of them entirely. I check on them every century or so now, to see if any of them are still around. They were purged pretty thoroughly once I withdrew my protection."
"I decided to protect the children," Shaco said. "Take them away, get a fresh start. Humble beginnings."
"That's a good idea," Velius said. "You know, we should write a book, a guide to the newly diamond rank. A lot of them have never even left their own worlds before. I was like that, and could have really used the advice. We could get together with some of the others, make a list of all the things we did wrong."
"Not a bad idea," Shaco said.
"I know a couple of—" He broke off mid-sentence.
"It's time," he said. Velius nodded, and both their auras underwent a change as their respective great astral beings inhabited them.
"I know why you've come," the Reaper said through Velius.
The rich, warm tone of Velius's voice became cold and bleak as it spoke the Reaper's words.
"The answer is no.
Asano is dead. He should stay dead." Shaco's voice was heavy, but clipped, as the Builder spoke through him.
"I agree," the Reaper said. "But he carried the World Phoenix's token. Those pacts are older than you, and I will not violate them for your childish indulgence."
"I'm not a child," the Builder said.
"Are you not?" the Reaper asked. "You play around in mortal affairs like a child with toys.
You have not been mortal for so very long now. The rest of us grow tired of waiting for you to realize that and act with decorum appropriate to your station.
What is the point of being what we are, if we allow ourselves to be bound by petty rules?
We are the rules, the Reaper said. To deny them is to deny ourselves.
We could be so much more, the Builder said.
More? The Reaper asked. You have built a world that you might play God, when being a god is so far beneath you.
Gods belong to one meager planet, which they share, the Builder said. I will be worshipped by an entire universe. I will be a great astral being and god both, becoming more than either. A god beyond gods.
Good luck with that.
A female voice came drifting through the room, accompanied by the arrival of a potent presence. The World Phoenix's vessel was also a Celestine like the Reaper's, but with alabaster skin and ruby hair, her expression more alive than the blank faces of the other vessels, with a teasing smile and an amused twinkle in her red gemstone eyes.
World Phoenix, the Builder said.
Why are you here? I requested her attendance, the Reaper said. I wish to settle things now before you make a foolish decision that will force the rest of us to act.
Your unbecoming obsession with mortal concerns is beneath us, the World Phoenix said, as she joined the others in sitting down.
You are the one who gave Asano a token. He's your outworlder.
I did not make Asano an outworlder, the World Phoenix said. That was happenstance. I simply gave him a gift as his soul passed through the astral.
This is the correct way to intercede in mortal affairs, the Reaper told the Builder. If you want a tree, plant a seed. Do not send an army to transplant it for you.
How I conduct my affairs is my business, the Builder said. Yet you came here to ask the Reaper to interfere in my affairs, the World Phoenix said.
What right have you to claim the dead? The Builder asked. They are the Reaper's concern.
And the integrity of dimensions is mine, the World Phoenix said. It is only with my permission that you conduct your little game, and remember well the conditions I have placed upon it.
I remember, the Builder said.
Do you? The World Phoenix asked. You have already pushed things to the limits of my tolerance. Gods are beings of singular planets, yet you gave one the means to interfere with not just another world, but another reality. I only stepped in because you have pushed conditions to the breaking point. Your divine accomplice has made a mistake that threatens to blow a giant hole in the side of a physical reality, taking an entire planet with it. That, in turn, could threaten the integrity of the reality as a whole. An entire universe, not even 14 billion years old. I provide someone with an actual chance to rectify the situation, and not only do you not thank me, but you come here and try to stop him.
You really think Asano can accomplish anything? The Builder asked.
He stopped you, the World Phoenix said. He's becoming a pleasantly effective little seedling.
He didn't stop me. That was the ritualist.
It was, wasn't it? The Celestial Book wanted me to remind you about proportionality, by the way. The ritualist is one of his, and one that he has high hopes for. He will not tolerate you sending some gold ranker to kill the boy out of spite.
I'm not so petty as that, said the Builder.
The World Phoenix laughed. Even the impassive face of the Reaper was tinged with skepticism.
You are literally here because you want revenge against one mortal, the World Phoenix said. You were not raised up from mortality yourself in order to reign over those you left behind. You need to turn your attention to the higher concerns to which you were brought up to attend.
I was not raised up, the Builder said. I took this power for myself.
The World Phoenix and the Reaper shared a glance.
Of course you were,
the World Phoenix said.
I asked the World Phoenix here to discuss a compromise, the Reaper said.
Why bother? The World Phoenix asked.
We both know that he won't learn until he crosses a line and faces the consequences.
I think we can all agree it would be better if it did not come to that, the Reaper said. I have terms that may not please either of you, but should at least be tolerable.
Speak your terms, then, the Builder said.
Builder, the Reaper said, you will be forbidden from interference of any kind with Asano's birth world. You will send no people, recruit no followers, and produce neither star seeds nor tokens.
That is no concession, the World Phoenix said. Asano's world is unstable enough. He already knows that if he acts upon it, I will intervene far more directly.
A price at this point he might be willing to pay, the Reaper said. This will be a formal pact, with all the consequences of breaking it that would entail. Further, his intercession in the other world will be curtailed.
I already have plans in motion, the Builder said. You have no right to interfere.
And you shall not be restricted from carrying them out, the Reaper said, but only with the ample resources you have already put in place. No new star seeds, no new tokens, and no more vessels. You will withdraw from your existing vessels and unmake all the unused seeds and tokens. That means the world itself, along with any attached astral spaces.
That's barely a concession either, the World Phoenix said. He has already made star seeds fall onto that world like raindrops. His invasion will not need more of them.
What do I get for these concessions? The Builder asked. The World Phoenix will offer Asano a power. It will aid him in the task ahead, but at a cost. No more resurrections. No force shall return him from the dead again. Not his soul entering a physical reality as an outworlder or any other force. When he dies, he dies.
If he reaches the upper ranks, the World Phoenix said, that would leave him vulnerable, compared to other essence users who could be brought back with gold and diamond-ranked essence magic. The power I offered him in return would have to be formidable to be worth the trade. It would also be incumbent upon him to accept it. Even we cannot reshape a soul without permission.
It can be powerful, but only in such that it is a tool for completing the task that lays before him,
the Reaper said. It's not enough, the World Phoenix said. You wish me to trim my own tree and credit the Builder for trimming he has already finished.
I will make a concession as well, the Reaper said.
Why? The World Phoenix asked. What concern is any of this to you?
Asano has died twice already. It concerns me that you would find a way to bring him back again and again until you are done with him. If you make him an outworlder countless times over, you make a farce of my role.
I am not the Builder, the World Phoenix said. I do not play callous games with the rules.
I also have some gratitude to Asano, the Reaper said. He and his companions gave final release to a number of souls that had been trapped. Many of them were my people. I am not opposed to helping him face the challenges ahead.
Favoritism, the Builder said. Asano has one of your shadows chasing him around.
The Reaper gave a brief, fatherly smile. Of all my children, Shade has ever followed his own path.
What is this concession you'll make? The World Phoenix asked the Reaper.
Asano is going to need a companion he can trust for the tasks ahead. Where he is going, there will be those that have his trust, and those that have the knowledge and power to help him. There will not be anyone with both, but I can provide such a person.
The World Phoenix narrowed her eyes. You're talking about another outworlder?
Yes.
How is that acceptable? The Builder asked. I came here asking you to leave a soul where it belongs, and not only do you refuse me, but offer to take another one out.
Yes, the Reaper said.
Why would I agree to any of this? The Builder asked.
Because the next time your people kill Asano, the Reaper said, he will stay dead.
Still not enough, the World Phoenix said. This outworlder. I'll agree if we bestow blessings to evolve her racial gifts. All her racial gifts.
Each of us can only advance one power, the Reaper said.
Which the three of us will, the World Phoenix said. We also convince three more to do the same.
That's outrageous, the Builder said. Why would I participate in this?
To demonstrate to the others that you are anything more than a selfish child in dire need of being admonished, the Reaper said. Do not forget how your position amongst our number became available.
The Builder looked at the Reaper for a long time before speaking. Very well, the Builder said finally. I agree to the terms. As do I, the World Phoenix said. I will remind you again, Builder, that Asano's world is already off-limits to you.
I know.
See that you remember, the Reaper said. If you violate the World Phoenix's conditions, you will be censured.
I said that I know.
You are known for saying one thing and doing another, the Reaper said. It's very mortal of you.
Epilogue Chapter 3. Recruitment. Both the seal and the rank restriction on the astral space aperture had been removed by Jason's team. Clive had turned the world engineers that were meant to invade their world into magical batteries that opened a passageway back to it. This not only allowed the team to escape, but also opened the astral space up to thorough exploration. The first step was securing a foothold in a zone still steeped in danger by the rapid spawning monsters, so Emir and his people moved in to secure what had formerly been the cultist camp. A number of Greenstone's local silver rankers volunteered to assist, aside from the potential wealth to be found. If they could forge a relationship with Emir, opportunities may well open up for the younger members of their families. What they discovered was a truth that Emir, as a professional treasure hunter, already well knew. Exploring the unknown came with unknown danger. While Emir's people were making preparations and learning everything they could from Clive, Humphrey and the rest of their team, two local silver rankers were left to watch the portal, along with a number of Emir's support staff. They had all been found dead days after the portal had been opened up. The deaths caused a furor in Greenstone's adventuring community. Aside from those who spent most of their time away from the city, like Thalia Mercer and Danielle Geller, the local silver rankers were a risk-averse lot. Most were older, having slowly worked their way through bronze using monster cores. Arabelle Ramore led the investigation and quickly reached an unpleasant conclusion. She had seen the work of an energy vampire in the past, and speaking with Jason's team quickly identified its most likely source. The Builder's last vessel, Thadwick Mercer, had never been found. Humphrey led her to the location in which they had left the soul imprisoning the sword to discover that both were gone. It was clear that the Builder had cut its losses, leaving the abandoned vessel to consume the loose soul and transforming into a potent threat. It had managed to approach the portal in secret and escape the astral space, stopping to feed on the other side. To help hunt the creature, Arabelle called her teammate Cal back to Greenstone.
"Have you ever tracked an energy vampire before?"
Emir asked him, after Cal was briefed on their situation.
"I have," Cal said. "They can come into being a few different ways, with varying results. When they started out as a ghoul, they frequently wind up deficient intellectually. They remain creatures of hunger and instinct. If that's the case, it won't be hard to track. Bodies will start dropping fast, so we should check the villages around the lake.
And if it is smart?
Then finding it will be rough. It'll know we're after it, so it will most likely look to avoid causing trouble and get out of the region entirely. Fortunately, Greenstone is an isolated region with limited means of departure. We can investigate them while keeping an eye out for deaths.
Even if it's laying low, an energy vampire still needs to feed.
The Mercer family compound was composed of 5 equidistant towers, interconnected by walkways. From the air above, the compound looked something akin to a magical circle. Thalia Mercer stood atop one of the towers, leaning on the stone balustrade as she looked out over the city. The fortunes of her family had not been great in recent times. The defection of Thadwick had been crippling in numerous ways. The family's reputation had been savaged, and Thadwick's insight into the Mercer family operations had led to a series of costly raids on their interests by the Builder cult. If not for their connection to the Duke and taking the lead in the purge of the cult from the city, the results could have been catastrophic. Even so, it would likely be generations before the family fully recovered. For Thalia herself, the worst part was the realization of just how badly she had failed her son. She had taken Cassandra to teach her the ways of an adventurer, while her husband had groomed their son to take over the family's local interests. She had known he was a spoiled boy, but only discovered the degree to which her neglect had harmed him when it was too late. Her husband's shortcomings were not a mystery to her. There was a reason his younger brother had been named heir to the dukedom, while Beaufort had been married off for political gain. She should never have let him have full control over their son's upbringing, but it had allowed her to take their daughter to see a larger world. Her neglect had allowed her husband to impress upon Thadwick his importance without ever tempering it with responsibility. Now she wondered if there was any of her son left. First, she had been told of his fate as a vessel for the Builder. Now he was some kind of vampiric monster.
"Do you even still exist, my little boy?"
she whispered to herself. "He does not," a voice behind her said, and she whirled around. She hadn't sensed the presence behind her, and still couldn't, even looking right at him. Her aura and magic senses told her there was nothing there. But her eyes saw the face of her son. He looked strong and healthy, but she looked into his eyes and did not see Thadwick behind them.
"You're not my son," she said.
"No," the energy vampire said.
"Then who are you?"
"I don't know," he said. "Your son was the soil from which I grew. I know the things he knew, but those memories are not mine. I remember his thoughts, yet they make no sense. The things he did are not things I would do. The things he said are not things I would say."
"What does that even mean?"
Thalia asked. "Your son is gone," the vampire said. "I am what's left."
"They told me that you're a monster," she said. "Did you come to kill me?"
"No," the vampire said. "Although I have killed, I'm trying to understand who I am, what I am. Your son's memories are the only guide I have, but I cannot understand the feelings and events that I remember. Your son hurt the things he loved, turned against the family that gave him everything, abandoned the friends who worked so hard to help and protect him." Tears crawled down Thalia's face. Despite wearing her son's face, this thing looked nothing like him.
"I failed him," she said. "I should have helped him, guided him."
"Will you help me?" the vampire asked. It sounded so vulnerable, like a lost child.
"No,"
she said, steeling herself. She squared her shoulders and wiped the tears from her face on the back of her arm. "The only thing left I can do for my son is to destroy the thing that he has become." Thalia erupted forward in a blur, only to be stopped short, her fist caught in the vampire's hand. He casually flung her from the tower rooftop to plunge towards the ground below. He knew that it would not harm her.
"I'm sorry, mother," it whispered.
The former cultist camp in the astral space had been left in shambles.